Ryan. I'm Chris, I'm an alcoholic. I forget my life, so I made a cheat sheet. That's cool. It's cool to be here tonight. I remember kind of early on when I got sober, I used to struggle a lot with like going out and having fun or like going to parties or wanting to be normal again, you know? And at some point, just from, you know, working a program and taking direction, my sponsor would have me always go to sobriety events or meetings or whatever and try to help somebody else. And somewhere in there, I fell in love with just connecting with other alcoholics, trying to help someone else. There's something about, I don't know, that like kind of pit of despair that we all come from and that getting to relate with somebody. I don't know, it gets to be more fun and more enjoyable making those connections than anything else. So it's good to be here. My sobriety date is October 13th, 2000. So I'm coming up on 16 years, God willing. I thought my sobriety was doomed for a little bit, and I'll get into that, because it was a Friday the 13th, and at that point when I started actually wanting to be sober, it became like a, oh, I can't now, though, so I just need to say screw it and go get drunk. Anyway, I was born and raised in St. Louis, Missouri, 1984, and as far as I can remember, pretty normal, fun childhood, playing in the woods. My parents got divorced when I was 3. I didn't remember that. So my whole life was kind of going back and forth between them, but they had a good relationship. They communicated, you know, I didn't, it was fine to me. Really liked sports a whole lot. Played most of everything. We'd kind of always be playing out in the street or playing in the woods, and I was kind of obsessed with, like, Rambo or Ace Ventura and stuff like that growing up, so I'd go out in the woods and I'd bring like my bow and arrow and my big buck knife on my, and I'd like think I'm gonna go, I don't know, get into something. Anyway, as I got a little bit older as a teenager, before I started drinking or using though, I would like get in fights with my parents. They were probably pretty sane and rational, and I was probably having feelings and didn't know how to deal with something, but I would grab my stuff and just head for the woods, and like, I'm running away. I'm just going to live in the woods and be, you know, a wilderness man. Like, screw you guys. That got weird. I'd make it like 2 to 4 hours. It'd get dark. My Pop-Tarts would run out that I'd stole from the house, and then I'd go back home. So in there, ice hockey. St. Louis ice hockey is kind of big. It's a pretty big sport there, and I loved it. I started playing that and then gave up all the other sports just to focus on that, and got pretty good. In middle school, I was hanging out, I don't know, like it's just awkward kind of growing up, at least for me it was, and middle school ran around and I really wanted to start hanging out with like all the cool kids, and they got high. I don't think they were drinking so much, but they were like smoking cigarettes and getting high, and I had like DARE class in my mind, like you do that stuff, your arm will fall off, like, don't do it. Were kind of relaxed about stuff. They didn't care about a lot of stuff. They were nonchalant. They had a lot of fun. So, I don't know, I just kind of started hanging out with them. And they would frequently ask me, you know, like, hey, do you want this? Do you want this? Do you want this? I'd be like, no. Just never had any appeal to try it. I guess sports were too important. It was weird. Here we talk about, kind of, you are who you hang with, or what we surround ourselves kind of rubs off on us, you know what I mean? And at first I had some trouble with that, because I hung out with that crowd for a while without touching anything. However, nothing had lost importance in my life. Like, school was still just as important, sports were still just as important, relationships, kind of all that stuff. And yet at some point, I don't know if it was from hanging out with them or not, I just kind of got that idea in my head, like, well, what would it be like if I got drunk, you know, like everybody, like, I see all kinds of people drinking with, you know, without much happening, and they look like they're having fun, and there's no real long-term consequences, like I heard drugs would give me, or whatever. So, it was like the last day of seventh grade, I had a bunch of friends over, I didn't know what I was doing. I had, like, stole liquor from my parents' cabinet, and we were mixing Jim Beam and Pepsi, and just drinking that, sitting in a circle, getting drunk, having the best night of our life. Couldn't tell you what we did or what happened. I just know we were in a basement and there was alcohol, and it was so much fun. I hadn't had fun like that, and I I don't know, really. You know, I'd kind of get a piece of... And I don't know if this is where sports comes in or not. I don't ever remember being like a kind of still-minded, quiet, like comfortable in my own skin person. If I got really focused on something, I'd kind of forget about me and things would be all right. I'd be kind of relaxed, you know what I mean? And I think that's some of why I liked hockey so much, that and the aggression that you got to take out. So it was just kind of, you know what I mean? It got to be real intense for real. And anyway, however... When I got drunk, that was so much better than anything I'd ever, you know what I mean? Like, I think I'd, like, kissed girls by that point, and that was it. It was better than that. It was better than, you know, school. It was better than video games. It was just better than everything. I'd never felt like I had connected or fit in with, like, life so much. You know, and I don't know that I would have put all that together at the time. You know what I mean? I heard someone say when I got sober, they said they forever felt like a square peg trying to fit into a round hole. And I could kind of relate with that. I'd go like, yeah, no matter what I did, I kind of always didn't quite feel like I, and I couldn't tell you why. I just didn't, I don't know. I don't think anybody else would have known either. You know what I mean? We're pretty good at being chameleons and blending in and hanging out and being a part of wherever. But anyway, now as that happened, I don't know if I was born with this disease or drank into it or what. I do know, however, I was the first of my friends awake that next morning after my first night of getting drunk, and I went straight back to the bottle and started drinking and got turned on the Price is Right, propped my feet up, and then was just sitting on the couch continuing to get drunk as my friends woke up. And I was like, yeah, summer, let's party! And they were, you know... So I don't know. I loved it, you know. And in my mind, I was going to do that as much as I could, and my life stay good, you know. So that's where that went. And I continued to drink over the summer, and then I continued to drink into the next year. And it was always to get drunk. I've never understood the let's just have a little bit, or get a buzz and then start to back off of it. Go nah, I've never ever, you know. To me, that's wasted beer. If you're using just a little bit and then you start and then you like. Why don't you just save that for the next time? You could have gotten nice and drunk. Like, you're an idiot. Anyway. At some point in there, I had, like, a lot of things in my mind, and I think probably most of us do. For whatever reason, I had a whole bunch of ideas of certain things and boundaries that I was not ever going to cross in life. Certain things that were wrong, that I didn't want to do. I didn't want to end up like that. The first of those was alcohol, you know, and then shortly after that it was, well, I'll try smoking some weed, what's wrong with that? And again, loved it. So now it's, I'm getting drunk and I'm smoking weed, and then, you know, never going to do drugs, and then shortly after that it was pills, and then acid, and then, anyway, onward and onward, and it continued to go from, and I had told myself, I got in trouble a handful of times and had to see counselors and had gotten into trouble with the cops, and then my parents started saying stuff like alcoholism runs in the family, like I need to back off, and I was really righteous, thinking like I'm never, you know, like I'm better than that because I'm not a liar. I'm a, you know, yeah, I like to do this, but I'm a good person and whatever. And I don't know if y'all know what a Johnson style intervention is, but that happened to me and they suck. I said that my parents got along, you know, and that was true, but they never hung out together. They would talk on the phone and see each other when they exchanged me. That was about it. Some of my sports events, whatever. I come home from school one day to my mom's house, and there's a couple cars in the driveway that don't belong there, and some of them are my dad and my stepmom, and they're never, and I've never ever seen that before anyway, so they're in the, and I walk inside, and Christopher? Yeah, and I, anyway... They're waiting for me downstairs, and they're all sitting around in this circle with all, you know, my parents, and then they have one chair for me. And then they say, sit down, we've got some stuff we want to talk about, you'll get your turn. So they go in a circle talking about how much they love me and the potential that I have and yada, 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 the stuff they've seen me mess up in my life, and I'm just getting more and more frustrated because in my mind I'm like, I'm doing awesome. It's just the fact that I'm drinking, and it's just that you're mad about. You know, and I don't think that was the case. Now I understand that as my alcoholism and a disease of the mind that doesn't let us see certain things. Alcohol was providing such a great payoff for me in that time. It was way, anyway. Even when that changed later, it was still hard to see my, you know, alcoholism and the things that had gone on anyway. So the conclusion there is they're not okay with me drinking ever. This was one of those, this wasn't the first time I'd gotten caught, and anyway, it's kind of coming to, I storm off. I was always like kind of, if y'all know who Eddie Haskell is, that was described as me. Very much, which is funny because I always thought, like, in my friends, I always told them, like, dude, I'll get you out of trouble. Let me go hang out with your parents. Like, they'll trust you again. Later, a couple of my friends' parents told me that they never trusted me and they didn't like me hanging out with their kids, and that was, again, like, what? Anyway, so I'm always, like, proper and nice and whatever to, like, adults and authority, unless I'm drunk, but I'm not at this moment. And, I storm off. I'm like, the F you guys, that, you know, whatever. It is fine to drink. Everybody does that. I don't have a problem. I've got everything in line. Look at my grades. Look at my da-da-da-da-da-da, whatever. And I storm off. And I remember this so vividly. My mom came running up the stairs in tears. My mom was one of those people. It was just kind of, she wasn't one of those people. I'm incredibly righteous and stubborn and arrogant by default. Like, just, At my finest, I very strong in those character defects. My mom comes running up the stairs. She always kind of struggled to kind of have, you know, boundaries and lines with me or kind of parent me because of that. She's crying, and I remember her grabbing onto my arm and saying, like, Christopher, when we say we want you to never drink again, what we mean is, like, we know kids do this growing up. We want you to do it so infrequently that you don't get caught, because if we don't know, then we're not going to be worried about you, because we know you're not doing it so much as to get caught. And I was like, oh. Now, I had just stormed off, cussed out everyone in my family, right? I come back downstairs. Guys, I'm so sorry. I was real out of line. I start talking all sweet and proper again. And I tell them, yeah, I've, you know, seen how alcohol was really going to turn my life bad, and I'm done forever. I got caught a month after that again, but whatever. I kind of talked my way out of that one again. Anyway, so in the meantime of that, like, I still, I was like pretty good at hockey. That was like, had become like, I didn't see this at the time, but in my mind, that was like the most important thing I had going on in my life. And I had, kind of cool story, I didn't know this at the time, my coach was a current NHL referee, and also had been in AA for 15 years. So cool. And I didn't know that part. But we're having a celebration at the end of the year banquet, and he's up here at the podium talking to, like, all our families and players and stuff like that, kind of, you know, like, great season, we finished first, and blah, blah, blah. And he starts going on and on about how he almost lost his family and his parents and his wife and his children and his job and blah, 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 and then got sober, and how much of a blessing his life is, like, how much he turned his life around, and the greatest gift in the world has been sobriety. And the whole time he is staring directly at me. So I'm sitting there like, because now, you know, everybody else is going to know, and they're going to be, anyway, no one said anything to me, so whether they knew or not, but I knew. He was talking directly at me. He knew. Anyway, he's a cool guy. Don't think he's sober today, unfortunately, but real cool dude. So I'd had, like, kind of cool people like that. You know, I had my uncle, too. My family is shot out. They are crazy. You know what I mean? The grandpa coming downstairs. First, he doesn't say hi to anybody. It's just, 67 years and still don't need a pill. Talked her into it. Like, still get it up. And he's, you know, congratulating the whole family about he doesn't need Viagra. I mean, they're crazy. I had an uncle that was, like, the funniest, craziest of all of them. And he, too, I knew he was a recovering alcoholic and crackhead. He loved crack. Anyway, he had 7 years sober when I got sober. And he became my saving grace, because my family drinks, and a lot of them got problems, except my mom, which is weird. But anyway, he became like, you know, kind of my serenity, having to get to go to family events and try to make living amends and be a part of. And I got to pull him aside and talk to him all the time, and it was awesome. But yeah, so end of eighth grade, you know, that kind of banquet talk goes on. The coach tells me that, whatever, and I'm in my mind, I'm going like, okay, I'm slipping. I gotta focus harder, and be better. And that doesn't happen. The next year again, sports are still, hockey's still real big, and our team's doing really good. And again, as I'm doing like pills in the morning to try to stay awake for school and to get through, and then getting drunk at night or doing drugs or staying out late, and I'd come home and I'd be in bed acting like I'm studying at home when my parents would go to bed, and then I'd sneak out and go do more, and that was kind of like every night, you know what I mean? And I'm dealing drugs then, and I was getting low on money, so I needed some extra. I remember one time, I don't know what my coach later thought of me, but I took some pill, and anybody that's done a lot of pills will probably know, I didn't ever know. I would just kind of ask. Like, people would offer them to me, and I'd say uppers or downers, and that's all I would say, and no matter what the answer was, I would take them. I just wanted to know how I was going to feel. That was it. And I would take as many as they gave me. So, and I don't remember what they said this one time, but I remember I took something, and I had the kind of wah-wahs, like everything, like wah-wah-wah-wah, and I couldn't hear very well, kind of like acid. Like, I'd, take acid, and I'd hear kind of everybody, but it was all, I couldn't hone in on one, because I'm listening to everything, and it's all, and it kind of was like that, except I had this wah, 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 real loud in the background. Anyway, weirdest thing, it lasted for 3 days, and then I woke up the next day after that, and it was gone, but I had a hockey game one of those days, and it was kind of a big one. It was like a big rival, and I'm out there skating around, and I can't hear anything. Everybody's yelling at me to pass the puck or telling me people are coming. I got creamed. I got smacked into so many boards and laid out, and it was bad. But anyway, I couldn't hear. I'd play drunk. I'd play on dry. I do, and in my mind, again, I'm still sitting there going like, No, this is priority. I don't ever let this interfere with this. I was just unable to see that. Same thing. I was like, drinking and drugs aren't interfering with school at all. I'd quit doing my homework. I'd started skipping a lot of classes, not going a lot of days, making excuses to leave when I was there. But I was passing. So in my mind, I'm like, it's not getting in the way. It's not interfering at all. Like, I'm good. It's just, that's how I see things, man. Like, whatever it is that it's acceptable for me to keep getting drunk. That's it. That's what my disease constantly tells me. Anyway, as time progressed, I don't need to go into all of it, but yeah, there was fights with cops that I'm instigating, and those don't end well, and, I kind of lost out. I kind of pushed everybody away in my life. Now, growing up, I was also, like, super, super sensitive. I really, like, cared a lot about what everybody else thought of me, before I started hanging out with that, like, cool crowd, I was really scared that they didn't like me, or that I wasn't going to get an in with them, and one of them had kind of approached me and said that, like, they really didn't like my best friend, and he was my only friend, he was the only guy that would hang out with me at that time, and I took my best friend over to this dude's house so that he and I could jump my current best friend, thinking that'll get me in with the cool, like, it was just, now it didn't end up happening, and he ran away, but again, just to kind of talk about my character, like, it was so selfish and would do anything so that everybody would like me and think I was okay, and I was constantly obsessed with what you thought of me, and that was kind of the prevailing thought, whether it was to be liked or to be successful, or whatever. It was just, I didn't really have any internal. It was all based on what I think you think about me, if that makes sense. Anyway, so, and as time went on, and that's who I was, those were some of the things that I'd done when not drinking. So, you can kind of imagine some of the things that I had done while on drugs or drinking. I was not a very good person, but in my mind, I'm freaking fantastic. At some point in there, I remember also, I don't know if y'all had this. I had this, like, kind of brief moments. Like, I would go and drink and kind of drink my life away, really. And then I'd have this like one short interval where I'd be like, am I like really messed up? And then I'd go back to it, you know what I mean? And then I'd, again, another brief, like something would happen and I'd go, whoa. Banquet was one of those. Another one was, I remember, like, I always had to have, like, some kind of white noise, radio, fan, something on to be able to fall asleep. And I didn't really notice that I needed that to happen, but I did notice, I do remember incredibly, because I had done acid and not slept the night before, some 40 hours, and, you know, it's coming, your back, it sucked, and I just wanted to go to bed all day, I just wanted to go to bed, and, but I didn't have anything left at home, I had done it all, and it's like 7 o'clock at night, and I go lay in bed like, oh, yes, I could sleep. And I just lay there, and I'm sure I was thinking about something, couldn't tell you what, probably a million things that I couldn't focus on one. And I just laid there, and laid there, and laid there, until my parents went to bed, and then I went back out, stole, you know, half a glass of, I don't know, something, some kind of whiskey probably, because I loved Jack Daniels. Anyway, drank that, and then went and passed right out. You know, and that was, again, one of those, like, is that weird? Oh, well. And then I, you know, just keep drinking, and, you know, I was stealing alcohol a lot of times to keep getting it and stashing it in the bushes out of my house or around my room. Like, stashes were getting caught and found, and I'd start putting them different places. Anyway, again, in my mind, I'm like, I'm just a smart guy that, you know, likes to drink and is smart about it. I don't remember. There's like a 4-month chunk of time I don't remember at all. I couldn't tell you one thing. I remember the last thing I really remembered was, it was a week after I had turned 16. I'd gotten real drunk. My friend kind of fought me to drive me home because he hadn't been drinking. I was leaning outside the window, throwing up all down the van, and we got pulled over. So now I'm trying to fight the cops because I think they pulled us over for no reason, and that's wrong. And I'm strapped into my seatbelt, yelling at them, like swinging and cussing at them, and they call for backup, and I can't get my seatbelt off, so they're in no danger. Anyway, now somehow since I wasn't driving, nothing bad happened to me. My friend that drove me home, we had a bunch of open alcohol in the car, even though he hadn't been drinking. So he got his license revoked for a while. I didn't care none about that. You know, I was like, you're a jerk for taking my keys. I told you not to. Like, screw you. Anyway, I remember that. And then I don't remember a few months. The next thing I remember is getting busted again. No, I remember this, actually. This is a weird one. At some point, I remember, it was just like one of those nights. I'm just kind of laying in bed, and I think I am drunk at this time, and I'm still not falling asleep, and I'm laying there, and I remember having this thought. I didn't believe in God at the time. I was raised Catholic, but not really, like, I didn't get it, and it wasn't pushed hard, and to me, God was this thing that if you do right, you get rewarded, and if you do wrong, you're going to hell. And, my priest had told me things that were sinful to think, and if you do those, you're going to hell. And I'd already done a lot of those. So at some point, I just threw the whole thing out the window and went, screw it, I'm already done. Like, might as well have some fun on the way. You know, whatever. That was about the extent of a God thing I had. And after that, it was gone. Anyway, I remember this night laying in bed, and I remember it wasn't a prayer because I didn't believe in God, but I kind of thought out to something, even though not thinking anything was there. I remember going like, is this all there is to life? And it was one of those kind of like really empty, desperate moments, you know what I mean? Like the drugs and alcohol weren't working so well anymore. Like, in the beginning, when I would get drunk, it would be like life was good, and I'd get drunk, and it'd be life was awesome, you know. And as I kept doing it more and more and more, and over life, it kind of went down, and I was more and more miserable usually. And then I'd have to get drunk or do drugs just to bring me back up to okay, you know. So now here I am, drunk, not even feeling okay. So this is real bad. But yeah, I remember that kind of lonely, empty thought, and I love how Bill W. writes. I love that he starts to talk about, that we cannot imagine life with or without alcohol. We will be at the jumping off place. We will know loneliness such as few do. I didn't have that moment entirely then, but I think I was starting to get a glimpse of it, you know, and that was my, like, is, like, it was just a, this sucks, like, is this it? And I didn't, and I was kind of hopeless, like, that. I didn't know what else there was, and I guess I'll just keep drinking, because I'm too, I don't really want to kill myself, but I'm miserable, and you know what I mean? So I'm, like, thinking of, like, stuff like that pretty frequently. Anyway, honestly, as much as I talk about, like, different, like, events or stories or things that happened, I don't actually, just if, in case anybody's, like, kind of new or struggled with this, I don't actually think it's the stories or events or how much we take that makes us more alcoholic or less alcoholic in any way. You know, where in the big book where it talks about, you know, like, if when you're drinking you have little control over the amount you take, or you want to quit entirely and can't, you're probably alcoholic. To me, that's as far as it goes, you know what I mean? It's the, I got a disease of the mind and allergy to the body. The disease of the mind is going to tell me, one way or another, that it's okay to go drink. Whether I consciously think it's okay, or I just unconsciously go pick it up after I've had, you know, resolutions, well, it don't matter. I'm going to convince myself, whether I'm onto it or not, to go drink. And then once I do, it's game over. I'm going to keep drinking and keep drinking and keep drinking, and, you know, the me that's going to come out is the me that nobody likes, including myself, and it makes me miserable and want to die, you know, and then it leaves me feeling hopeless, going like, I might as well just take myself out and do the world a favor, you know. So to me, that's my alcoholism. Anyway, shortly after that thought, because I think that was like the, as close as I could come to a prayer in my life, like going, is that it? Shortly after that, I got busted again, and was kind of mandatory so that I could not get sent away. I had to go into, like, start going to meetings. My parents were pushing for treatment really hard, and I was bucking and kind of talking my way out of that a little bit, but I had to go to meetings. So I'm going to meetings, and they, you know, are offering white chips, and they're offering different things, and a lot of them are young people, and they're trying to hang out with me, and I remember I'd met some, like, real cool dudes there. One of them ended up becoming my sponsor, but at this point I still was like, you're some sober weirdo, get away from me. He, one time I remember, he, like, called me to be like, hey man, what are you doing? You coming to the meeting tonight? And I was like, I don't know. And he was like, well, where are you at? And I was like, well, I'm at home. And he's like, good, because I'm in your driveway, get in my car. He'd be like, dang, like, I did not want to, you know what I mean? Like, he was just good. I think he knew alcoholics well. And of course, he came walking into my door, so then my mom knows he's there, and so I gotta go. But I had done that enough to where I think at some point, like, a little bit of hope was coming in, even though that wasn't like a conscious thought, you know what I mean? It was because I was still drinking, and I had never picked up a white chip because I'm here. I don't want to try this way of life. Like, I don't. I was all righteous about not being a liar. Even though I lied all the time, there was just certain things that in my mind I was like, oh, no, I'm an honest guy, you know. And that was one of them for whatever reason. So, but I'm coming, and I'm coming, and I'm coming, and thank God no one told me, you know, that I had to have the desire to quit drinking to be here. Everybody probably knew. Anyway, at some point I did end up having to, I got busted more, and anyway, then I agreed to go into, like, an outpatient program and do meetings. And somewhere in there, I remember, all of what I just told you about, like, my progression, what I was doing, the other people in my life trying to intervene, I remembered none of that when I was, like, coming to get sober. None of it. I didn't even told you, like, I don't like drinking, you know what I mean? Like, pot's all right, but everything else, no. And I'd have meant it, you know, and again, this is one of those things, like, I'm a liar, but not a liar, you know what I mean? I'd been going to a lot of First Step stuff, as it is, and Step Zero, you know, kind of, you know, honest, open-minded, and willing, and starting to listen a little bit, starting to kind of want to get sober. I'd started doing some stuff, because at some point I'd kind of come to, like, you know, my sponsor was real big on, like, if sobriety is not better than drinking and getting high, then I'm going to go back to drinking and getting high. Like, this is actually better than being drunk. Which made no sense to me, you know what I mean? But it was appealing. Like, that to me was one of those attraction rather than promotion. Like, it was just like, I was like, really? You're that happy? Like, they look different than me for sure, but like, that happy? Like, you prefer. Anyway, and it got me a little curious. So I started being willing to do some of the stuff, you know what I mean? And I didn't have a first step at all. I don't think I could have one. I started telling people more about what I could and what I recalled about my life, and started hanging out with them a little bit more, kind of learning how to interact and how to be a human being and how to have a friendship. I couldn't talk to you. You know, I was clueless. It was all, I'd become 100% dependent upon alcohol for everything in my life. To talk, to drive, to go to a job, to be at school, to learn, to pay attention. I didn't know how to do any of that stuff without drugs and alcohol. I couldn't tell you I didn't know that. That's where I was at. And anyway, he was kind of taking me under his wing. And there was a night where, now granted, I've been like, you know, anyway, doing some stuff and not all of it. And this has been, you know, a couple months period of me going to meetings and kind of not wanting to get sober, to kind of wanting to get sober, to not, to kind of. And in that process, somewhere in there, we had gone to a gas station before a meeting. We were having a meeting at a church, and they didn't have any food, and I was, you know, kind of hungry and thirsty. And I'd gone and gotten like a Mountain Dew and some chocolate-covered pretzels, and my sponsor came up right beside me and was like, dude, those are gross. You're really going to eat those? And I'd again told you I'd have them not sensitive at all, yet it bothers me that he doesn't like chocolate-covered pretzels. So I'm like, what do you mean? Like, these are the best thing ever. Like, and we're just kind of trash-talking, like, you know, like, friendly at first. He ends up saying that he likes chocolate and pretzels, but the idea of them together is horrible. And I cued in on that. I was like, you son of a... You're telling me to be open-minded constantly and to try new things. You're telling me you've never had one of these together and you're going to sit here and tell me they're awful? I'm like, and I'm, that sent me over the edge, you know what I mean? He's like, no, it sounds gross. And I freaked out. I'm screaming at him, trying to get him to try one of these. He refuses to do it. In my mind, it's because I don't have long enough sober and he doesn't respect me or look up to me. So now I'm hurt, my feelings are hurt about that too. So I get out and I go to a group of people, maybe thinking like one of them he'll listen to. And I'm telling them the whole story to try to make him try one of these. Anyway, he's like, no, dude, I'm not doing it. So I'm like, free. And I go over to another group. And at this point, I'm like screaming, oh my God, he's making me one. And they're all just sitting there staring at me like. He comes up to me and like kind of like smacks it out of my hand, like smacks my hand down a little bit. And he's like, get it through your head. Like, I'm not going to eat one of these. Like, real, like, chill out. And again, like, I'd, you know, escalated things to the point of like, we might just throw down right there. Like, I'm freaking out. And I storm off. I'm gone. Sobriety is stupid. All you people are stupid. F all of you. This guy that, I don't know, kind of like my grand sponsor, kind of saw that the end of that scenario go down. And he came running after me. And I was like, don't you try to get me to stop doing this. Like, this is stupid. Don't stand in my way. Like, I'm out of here. And he's like, fine, cool. Just tell me what happened. I saw you earlier today. You seemed like you were actually having a good day sober. I don't get it. Like, will you just tell me what happened and then you can go? Just for my own mind. And I was like, you're not going to make me try to make me stay? And he's like, no, dude, just tell me what happened and then go. And I was like, fine. Thank God. I'm sitting there telling this guy, going through that, recounting these things that happened. And as I'm explaining it to you, I have one of those quick moments of clarity that, like, holy, I'm insane. Like, what? I just went a whole day not thinking about drugs and alcohol. That didn't ever happen to me. I don't know when the insanity went away, but at some point it just went away. You know, like that, like kind of constant, like I want to get high, I want to get high, I want to get high. Nice ass. I want to get high, I want to get high. Oh, I hate that person. I want to get high, I want to get drunk. Like, I just, that's how I thought when I got sober. And it was real tough to obviously not drink or use in those circumstances. And I was doing it just kind of with any suggestion I could take. And then I didn't think about that all day. And I was kind of laughing without being drunk. And I didn't realize this until I'm recounting this whole story, like, and now it's the end of the world. What I was, like, praying for a few weeks ago, like, to just make this insanity go away, has happened, and now I hate everything and screw it all because he won't eat a chocolate-covered pretzel. And for whatever reason, at that moment, I got, like, oh, that's my disease, like, dude, like, over a chocolate-covered pretzel, like, what else is going on in my life that I'm listening to myself about that I think is sane? Like, and it, like, genuinely scared me, you know what I mean? Like, what? I'm clueless about myself. Like, now the cool thing was at that moment, too, as much as I got my powerlessness and unmanageability in my life at that moment and disease of the mind, the other thing that started creeping in initially right there was hope, you know, because if what I think is that delusional and crazy, then maybe everything I think about the future is wrong. If I'm that crazy, you know? And I love how the steps came together, and I think it was a total God-inspired thing. But in my experience, as I work all of them, that's what happens. As I work one, the next one just kind of starts happening all on its own. And then I work it, and the next one, again, just kind of starts, you know, hope is the principle of the second step. And that was creeping in as soon as I was willing to just be a little bit more honest, you know, the principle of the first step. I couldn't be honest about, oh yeah, man, I didn't remember so much of that stuff in my life, but I could recount a situation that just happened, and that was stuff that I didn't usually do. Like, that was actually, like, the most willingness I'd ever had at that moment, you know. And anyway, and I love, again, you know, where the big book talks about, you know, I'll mess this up entirely, so forgive me. But where it talks about, like, the broad highway to God and that being roomy and all-inclusive and never exclusive, like, there's plenty of room to jump through. To me, that's, like, always been, whether I've acknowledged it or not, when I started praying, it wasn't because I believed in God. It was me and my four walls going, and I couldn't even say God. That name, the word just pissed me off. So I'd say higher power, you know, I could do that. It'd be like, higher power, something, if you're there, help me stay sober. And that was kind of it, you know. And again, but through doing that, I kind of gradually started to think in something. And then I started to have these experiences in life and in sobriety, this where hope would creep in, or like where a genuine connection with another human being, and I'd kind of feel that, like, love between people, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know that I'd ever really felt that. Infatuation, what, I don't know. But this was something stronger than I had remembered feeling, you know? And that started to become something better than drug, like, or any drunk I'd ever had, like, as good as I'd ever felt. To be able to come and stand in here, to know that all of you guys know me none, but we all come from the same place, and just out of that, we all give a crap about each other and love each other, and we'll do whatever we can to help one another stay sober today and not go back to how it was. That kind of hopelessness and desperation. That alone, to me, it beats my best night drunk ever. So if my requirement for that is showing up to a meeting, telling a story, or showing up to a meeting listening, asking someone what's wrong that's kind of sitting by themselves, trying to help somebody, taking meetings to detoxes, calling a couple people a day, whatever it is, you know, the millions of things that we do to get out of ourselves and try to connect with somebody else and think of them. If that's all I got to do to have that, like, better feeling and experience, like, I'm in. Sure, yeah, I'll do that every day, you know. Absolutely, to not have to go back to that. And to me, the thing became like a... Here's another thing I struggle with. Again, because I got sober young and I don't know, people and life and I don't know, kind of popularity were still so important to me, or being normal and doing life stuff. You know, I think of all the people at parties, and in my mind, after I got sober, all I really wanted to know is, when can I be a normal person again? When can I go, you know, have a normal girlfriend and go to normal parties and just be able to not drink and have fun and do everything, like, there, like, when can I do that stuff? You know what I mean? And, you know, I don't know, page 100, 101, 99, somewhere in there in the big book where it talks about, you know, we can go to plain, ordinary whoopee parties. But the whole thing starts off with if we're in fit spiritual condition. And then it goes through all the scenarios and how we think when we go into those scenarios, and to see what we can, do we have a valid reason for being there? you know, try to see what we can bring to the table, or are we just trying to steal a little vicarious pleasure from you know, our surrounding, whatever. And again, that, to me, that stuff is, as I got sober, that I couldn't honestly be real straight with where I was at with that stuff. You know what I mean? I remember I was at a seminar and there was questions, and it was my great grandsponsor giving it. Anyway, then I shot my hand up. I had like 2 years sober at the time. I was like, how do you be more self-honest? I really wanted to be more self-honest. He lit me up and shut me down in front of everybody. It was so embarrassing, but so good for my ego. He was like, if you don't have 5 years sober, I don't even want you thinking about how to be self-honest. You just don't care about that because you don't want to have to be humble and honest with other people. You don't want to need help, and you don't want people to actually know you. So why don't you just keep focused on being honest with others? And it was, again, hurt my ego, but so good for me to hear, like, okay, I don't have to focus on that. Because that's true. Like, I'm still not much good at it. You know what I mean? And I don't actually, the cool thing is I don't care much to be. You know, in my disease, yeah, but the, you know, kind of more the sober, God-centered, intuitive thought there is like, yeah, I want to be connected with you. I got so much hope getting sober from other people that had longer time sober, coming and getting honest with me about stuff, or sharing insanities about stuff, or things going on. You know what I mean? Like, that was how I learned what we talk about and what we do, and how we get restored to sanity. You know what I mean? The second step says that we will come to believe, and how I get there is I got to get my junk out of the way. And again, I didn't know what my junk was, and you people, you know, y'all taught me that. Anyway, I don't remember where I started, why I started going there, but again, that was kind of learning to just connect with other people, you know. And that was another one that, as I, you know, again with this, I have the principles written down here for some hope, and then faith coming in. Yeah, that's nice. You know, if y'all haven't done this, I strongly suggest in How It Works, where it starts talking about the actor that wants to run the whole show, and then getting up to the third step prayer. If y'all have never paid this much attention to it, I read this thing every day. It was part of my morning prayer meditation for 6 months straight, and then I continued to read it a lot after that. And one of the things that I think someone actually pointed it out, and I actually listened, but I, you know, it took me doing the work, is it makes very clear in there, if you read it, the order of events of things that happen. I, as an alcoholic, always want to feel better, want to understand, want to see how this way is going to be better for me than what I currently want to do, or what I'm scared of happening. And I put it out on my sponsor a lot too, to, you know, make them convince me just how it's going to be better if I, you know, apply the steps in my life in this situation rather than do what I want. Which is a mixed bag, you know what I mean? Because that's the kind of hard part for sponsorship, is how much of that do you do? Do none of it, we're likely to just go get drunk. Do a lot of it, and we get over-dependent. And, you know, it's whatever. You learn as you go. I'm sure we'll all screw that one up a whole bunch and continue to the rest of our lives, and we'll all learn together. But anyway, in that, it does make very, very clear that, first off, what I have to do is be honest and surrender. That is the first thing I must do, no matter what. Secondly, is if I'm open-minded and pray to God and say, muster out whatever genuine prayers I can say, it is after doing that and after moving my feet that faith starts to come into the picture. I don't start to get that kind of peace of like, yes, I'm okay and I'm going to be okay, until I work the first two steps. I have to work those for that one to come in. As far as God goes, I kind of struggled a lot getting sober with, and it took me a while to be open to go into any kind of church or to really being open to learning anything from any organized religion out there whatsoever. I later did, and it's been fantastic. However, at the time, I still think God meets us where we're at. And okay, cool. My sponsor would kind of say concrete things to me, and one of them that I'll get into in a minute is, he was like, think of the principles behind the 12 steps. And that was a very clear thing for me that I could read in the morning and incorporate into my prayers. And those were the 12 qualities I would try to practice throughout the day, because I thought maybe that's what God would want me to do. You know, I like everybody, I think we all kind of struggle with, what's God's will for us? What does that mean? What do we do? And I don't know that I have a real clear answer for that, other than it gets simpler in time and the more we practice it. And my experience was I started with the principles. That was what helped me. That was a kind of concrete. I can be honest when I go to work and when I talk with my sponsor or my sponsee or show up at a meeting. I don't have to try to pretend like everything's okay when it's not. And I can just be real and be honest, you know what I mean? And then have some humility. I can quit trying to act like I'm better than everybody else or like I'm so much worse off than everybody else and just kind of try to be a worker amongst workers. Anyway, so it was those kind of things, you know what I mean, that I kind of focused on to go like, okay. In that, my sponsor was talking about like, I love this. One of the best ways he said to connect with God is he was like, I heard someone talk about this, so I'm going to share it with you. And he called it 3DHP, three-dimensional higher power. And he talked about the God within, the God without, and the God between. And he was like, whenever I'm most right and whenever I can like really get connected with a higher power to like to run my life, I'm doing all three. I'm getting my own junk out of the way and connecting to that God within. I'm, you know, seeking for signs outside of me for the God without. And I am absolutely rigorously honest and open-minded and listen to other alcoholics to get that God between. He's like, when I have all three of those. And I've stuck with that, and it's made so much sense to me because any one of those, I think, messes me up and is an imbalance. You know what I mean? If I'm 100% in people, well, then people are my higher power, and that's just a setup to get real resentful when I don't get what I want. You know what I mean? At the same time, I need people because if it's just going to be me and God, I'm freaking crazy, and I will, you know, not be right at all, and I'm going to get myself drunk again with the best of intentions. Same thing with that God within, you know what I mean? I need to tap into that, and if that's the only thing I've got, I mean, anyway, so I really like that, the three-dimensional higher power, you know, God within, God without, God between. I wanted to bring that here. What time am I supposed to wrap this up?
We'll stop there.
10 o'clock.
Okay. 10 minutes? At the 10?
No, you get
a
10.
Okay. Anyway, the other thing that was super helpful with me as I was like going through the steps with my sponsor, I don't know if I said this off the forefront. I'm still like I still have a sponsor. I still sponsor other people. I still have a home group. I still go to lots of meetings, and not as many as I did back then. However, when times are tough, yeah, I do. I moved here to Georgia a year and a half ago, and I fell in love with recovery and trying to help other people and became a counselor and did it for like 10 or 12 years, and it was awesome. But I had made that my higher power, and I had done that for long enough that I needed to not be a counselor anymore, basically. You know what I mean? And I had no clue else what I wanted to do with my life. I thought I'd figured it all out. And anyway, it became really clear. And thank God I don't know how close I was to getting drunk. It was a real difficult time. But anyway, when I moved here, I was, you know, kind of without anything going like, well, what do I do? My identity had become being a counselor, you know. Part of the reason I wanted to move here, I wanted to get away from everybody in that city with recovery. And, you know, just, I don't know, some of them looked up to me, and I really thought it was going to be a lot tougher for me to be honest, you know what I mean? And I had lived here before and been sober with people that knew me real well. I'd kept up with some really long-term friends and rekindled with a sponsor immediately. And anyway, a godsend, worked out perfectly. And today I love that, like kind of the worker amongst workers. I just get to, I'm an electrician today, and I get to just practice my principles at work, try to do an honest, fair job, be of service, be helpful, be, you know, like loving to whatever people I see. I get to try to be extra helpful and not get any kind of, I don't know, it's really kind of a thankless thing, and it's awesome. I really enjoy it. It's one of those, I had a sponsor too that was real big on anonymous good deeds, and he would talk frequently about, even when we don't think so, how much we're just seeking for what other people think of us. And he, you know, like a lot of people have probably heard, like, if you want self-esteem, take esteemable acts, or worthy acts, self-worth, same thing. So my sponsor was like, well, do good deeds and don't tell a soul. Don't tell me, don't tell a friend, don't tell anybody. So I started doing that. And they'd be random things to like, I learned how to be friends with girls when I got sober. I didn't know how to do that. And at some point, like, I'll tell you all this, some of this, I guess. But I'd like, just go buy like a flower for like a whole bunch of girls and then leave it on a table anonymously. You know what I mean? That they would get shook. So I was like, they get treated so bad getting drunk. And anyway, so it's just stuff like that. No one ever knew. You know what I mean? And go grocery shopping and go scour the whole area to pick up all the like grocery carts or pick up cigarette butts or do whatever. And again, not tell us. So just kind of go. And I'd start doing those things and not tell anybody. And it really did wonders to actually start to like me. You know, I think, you know, more than the not drinking and not having to live with that insanity of wanting to get drunk 24/7, the greatest miracle in my life, hands down, getting sober, has been getting to be comfortable in my own skin. I get to like who I am today, you know, as much or more as alcohol ever did for me. As much as I could, you know, get drunk and have fun and feel great, when I choose to work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is most of the time now, I get that same thing or more. I get, you know, that kind of happiness and freedom and ability to kind of quit thinking about me and think about somebody else. And when I hit the pillow at night, like, there is not much red ink, you know, on a 10th step. There's obviously, there's always improvement, but overall, I've gotten a lot better about I don't know, being fair and humble and looking more at the good. And it's truly, like, my whole life I wanted to be somebody else, or I wanted other qualities about other people forever. And again, I don't know when that happened and when that went away, but I'm pretty sure it was as a result of working the 12 steps, depending on God, and starting to quit focusing on what everybody else thinks of me and focus on, well, what would I like me for? Or what do I like about other people? And then trying to be that. And that's, you know, again, that's where the principles came in a whole lot. Brotherly love, service, perseverance, starting to have integrity and do what I say and say what I did and mean it and follow through and not overcommit myself. Like, again, there's like all these like real simple things that as I started to really practice those, even though I didn't get to do all the stuff that I wanted to do, or I didn't have all the money that I wanted, or the job, or the, you know, maybe not all the girls, you know, what I started to like me, and that was like the coolest thing ever. And I still mess that up frequently. I'll start caring way more about what you think about me and what I look like, and then you get stuff in your life, and then I go, thanks God, got it from here. This is real important to me. And, you know, and again, it's always kind of sneakily and subconsciously, and that's, you know, even today at 15 years sober, I'm pretty convinced my disease is alive and kicking just as much as ever. It rarely today is go get drunk. I don't remember the last time I've genuinely thought about getting drunk. Every once in a while I think the thought comes in, but it's, I don't remember the last time I've had that like overwhelming, like when I got sober. I don't know. However, I do frequently have thoughts to do things my own way, to be really selfish, to stay really focused on whatever it is to me that's important at the time, to not care about somebody else or what they want, or to not do or be somewhere I said I would be because I just don't feel like it right now, or it's just an inconvenience, or, you know, they're a jerk anyway. I just frequently will think about, you know, yeah, just different self-centered things. And to me, that, I very much agree with that's, you know, the root of my trouble, because it seems to me in my life and experience anyway, that when I deal with my self-centeredness and through action am less and less self-centered, whether I'm thinking about me or not, if I'm acting and doing something for you, you know, I still love the just getting to show up and make coffee. The fifth tradition, they have so many service positions, and a lot of them are set up. Spend 30 minutes cleaning up. Be the cigarette butt picker. You know what I mean? Doing those kind of, like, thankless, behind the scenes. No, that, to me, is like, I love doing that stuff. You know what I mean? And not necessarily that I love the act of doing it itself, but that's, That's how I got sober, you know what I mean? And thank God I had people to kind of turn me on, to push me to do that type of stuff, because it is. I needed to change my action, and I didn't know what to change. And anyway, I just... the other thing, I guess, just to throw this in there with it, with the screwy as I've been throughout different points in my life, trying to get sober, not get sober, the biggest thing, the thing that made the biggest difference this time was the people that I hung out with. You know what I mean? I was kind of taught that if you want what we have, do what we do. And principles before personality to me, like we say that in the traditions a lot. At least in my personal relationships, what that meant was I needed to start choosing people to spend my time with based on the principles they live their life by, not the the similar personalities that we have, you know. Because for me it was a lot of times like, oh, I want to go hang out with the pretty girls that I get good attention from and feel good, or I want to go hang out with the people that have all the similar interests in me, in fishing or hunting or sports or, you know, whatever. Will go gamble with me, which was horrible. Anyway, but when I stopped basing it on those things and started basing it on, this guy has, like, it seems like the best program that I know, I'm going to go spend some more time with that guy, and vice versa. I made some of the best friends I've ever had in my life and are still close with today, and, you know, I feel bad for people that say, like, I get sober and you... all these people in your life, you lose them. I'm like, well, that was not my experience. Like, no, they're not all sober today, but also, I think it's because of that. I started choosing to, like, hang out with people based on principles. So a lot of people that were in my life then worked really, really hardcore programs because they were desperate to be sober and that grateful for it. And as I continued to do that throughout my sobriety, like, invest in those relationships in my life, go figure, we all stay together and stick around. Anyway, thank you all very much for having me. It has been a pleasure. That's it.